So Joe, where I want to start is with many guitar players, and I have a guitar here. Some of the first songs that you learn are very instrumental in kind of getting you going on the guitar. What was one of the first songs that you learned that you were proud that you were able to play that one?
Oh man, I started with all the really easy stuff like kind of Smoke on the Water, Seven Nation Army, like the things when you're going up and down the one string. And then I think the first song that I was like really kind of proud of was I learned how to play really badly the intro to Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
Totally classic, nothing exciting. And I was so bad at it. I was doing it like one note at a time, but that was me. I was like a guitar god.
What made you fall in love with the guitar then?
Oh man, I think it was a number of different things. I had a lot of music in the house growing up. My mum and dad both listened to, my mum loved the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and loads of kind of 60s stuff. My dad was a big fan of a guy called Frank Zappa. I don't know if you know
Sure,
him.
of course.
Yeah, so it's like that was kind of cool. So when I learned Stairway to Heaven, the first version I had actually heard was the Frank Zappa version.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So yeah, there was lots of music in the house. My big brother got a guitar and then he moved on to drums, so there was a guitar there as well. And actually, quite embarrassingly, I think one of the final nails in the coffin was did you ever see School of Rock?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so I think I tried to play guitar before that, and then that was another thing that kind of pushed me over the line.
Even that scene where Jack Black plays those little riffs of all the popular rock songs, that one still sticks out to me, that he's playing Smoke on the Water and all that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, definitely, man.
when you and I believe you know the guys from the band for a very long time, but as you were starting to kind of play together, and I know the band didn't really officially form until much later, but those initial kind of, as you were still kids probably, what were those initial kind of get-togethers like?
Oh, well, they were so scrappy and haphazard, and like you say, there was a lot of time that we were all just kind of playing guitar, and there was like five guys with an acoustic guitar. Do you know what I mean? Everyone just playing the same chords. So for years that was kind of our practice. We were all like you say, we were all really good friends, so we all spent a lot of time with each other. And so yeah, there was music all through that, and it wasn't necessarily that we were going to rigid practices. That did come a little bit later on when we started getting a bit serious about it. But to start with, it was just we all loved music and we all wanted to be the ones making music. We were the terrible people at the parties that took the acoustic guitar and went into a bedroom and sat and sang songs.
But I find that interesting because I believe, and I don't know the exact timeline, but you guys you kind of started to get real jobs, and then kind of I don't know how much you played together in that time, but there was a moment where you, as you say, things got a little bit more serious. What was the turning point for you for the band then?
Well, like you say, man, I thought we had done the childhood thing, and then we all kind of grew up a little bit, got real jobs, and I think it was a couple of years on the grind of like doing the grown up thing and trying to progress and stuff. We all got a little bit down our career ladder, and then realised that it was like actually this isn't really what I want to do. Jack and Callum had went to Benicàssim, festival in Spain. And I think they saw Razorlight, and they came back and they were like, "Right, guys, we're getting the band back together." And I was like in a terrible relationship, living like miles away from everyone. I hadn't seen anyone in ages. I was like, "Yes, absolutely,
Freedom.
yeah, definitely." So I think we were all in the same kind of headspace at the same time. I think we were about 21, 22. So it was like right at that point in your life where you're not really a grown up, not really a child anymore. But yeah, it was just that we all had the same kind of desire to be doing something else.
Because
And yeah.
what oh sorry. Because
No, no,
what
no.
I find interesting oftentimes is, and I hear this from musicians all over the world who come from certain places, when you grow up, it doesn't seem feasible to be a musician, or it doesn't seem, oh, that's some other people who do that, and you don't really realize that perhaps it's on in your path as well. So was that a thing for the band? Because I wrote down Whitburn where I'm not sure if it's just you who's from there or the other guys as well.
All four of us are, we're
Okay.
all from, it's a tiny little place. There's only, I think, 15,000 people or something that stay here. So yeah, like the idea that being a musician or doing something in the entertainment industry really felt like something that other people from other bigger, fancier places done.
Right.
And that we always had kind of ambitions of making music and being musicians of some kind. But I don't know, for me personally, I was just happy to be getting paid to be making music. Like if I could do that, that was me. I had won. I didn't really care about what kind of heights we got to or number one records or any of that kind of stuff. I was just, if I'm playing music and that's my life, then that's fantastic for me.
But that must have felt insane then, coming from where you're from with that attitude, and then you do get a number one album during probably one of the most difficult times for music, which is a worldwide pandemic, pretty much. So how do you look back at that now? Is it just surreal?
Yeah, I think with things like that, it's really hard to see what's going on while you're still in it. But now with a little bit of retrospect and hindsight, it's like that was such a crazy time. It was everything was happening, and then all of a sudden it just wasn't, and the world stopped. But we had to keep plowing on with what we were doing. We had like this little bit of a spark that we had to keep burning until we, when lockdown hit, we hadn't entirely finished the record. So we still had bits and pieces to put together, and then we had to market it and get it out. So yeah, it was absolutely crazy. So I think when you're going through something like that, you don't really have time to stop and look around and go,
Sure.
what's going on just now? But yeah, with hindsight, it's all been a bit crazy.
But if you think about that album now, I mean, this is maybe difficult to say about your own music, but do you understand why people kind of latched onto it?
Yeah, it is quite difficult to say about your own music because I think with when I listen to one of our recordings, it takes a long time before I can hear it as a song in its own right. I can still hear what I was feeling on the morning that I put that guitar part down, or I can still hear the part that got taken out that I quite like that maybe would have been in. So there are all these things. It's hard to look at it as just a song. But yeah, I think now that there's been a couple of years past, like sometimes my girlfriend's got all her songs on her playlist, and sometimes we'll be in the car and something will come on, and I usually skip past it. But there's been times recently that I've been like, oh, I'll leave that on. That's actually quite good. So yeah.
You can look at it a little bit objectively now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. And if you see the progression then of the band, because I mean, I'm sure that was a surprise to all of you to get a number one album and then go into that whole circus. I can only imagine. What were some of the unexpected things you got to experience because of everything that happened?
Well, I think we had such a unique experience with, so I don't think there's many people that have had their debut album go to number one, but then not be able to celebrate it with anyone. So it happened, and we found out, and I was in my house, and I got the text, and I'm like, yay. So it was great when we eventually got on the road to actually get out and tour it, and that felt like everything that you do, like I say earlier on, man, I was never really expecting these highs that we're at. So it's kind of anytime you walk into a venue that's like these venues that you've heard about your whole life, or you go to another country and you're like, I'm here, or these people in another country sing the lyrics back to the songs that you're playing, and it's like this is it's very surreal.
Being on this is just as a fan, but being on that transmit stage, because I've seen so many YouTube videos of that place and just the crowd going nuts with everybody, and it seems like such a fun stage to play. But what is your experience with transmit and kind of seeing that sea of people?
Honestly, it's unbelievable, but it's imagine what it feels like going into battle used to feel like for like the soldiers back in the day on horseback or something, because there's just a thing about having that many thousands of people facing you at the screaming. Like, even though it's a positive thing and you still have to,
Sure.
it takes you aback a little bit. But yeah, honestly, the thing that I remember about Transmit, like, it's always, and this isn't common in Scotland, but it's always the sunniest day of the year, like 37 degrees. And I'm on stage, like, trying to avoid the sun, not catch fly, burst into flames. But yeah, it's a properly incredible experience. The Scottish crowds are always, I know everyone probably says this about the place that they're from, but the Scottish crowds really are world class. And getting to play a festival like Transmit and being on a stage that, like, we looked up to when we were coming up in the industry, and when we were young and we were going to festivals like Transmit, like Tea in the Park, which was kind of
Right,
Transmit.
right, right.
Transmit. Yeah, so we had always kind of fantasized about maybe one day getting to do it. So now getting to do it and getting to climb up the bill and get closer and closer to the headliners, it's something, it's definitely one of the things that you're able to go, yeah, I'm absolutely proud of this.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I've only been to Glasgow once for a concert, Gary Cinnamon, and I mean the crowd
Oh,
was crazy.
really?
So
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, his fans go nuts.
no, and then I feel that with you guys in Transmit as well. So I really love that kind of the celebration of music. But let's get to Millennials then, because that's the new album. Now I believe that the second album was written in 8 weeks, written and recorded in 8 weeks.
Yeah,
Now
pretty
with
much. Oh, sorry, on you go.
no, go. Well, with the third one now, then was that something you tried to repeat to kind of keep it not to overthink too much?
It wasn't so much a conscious thing, but I think that is kind of the way that we've learned that we work best, is
Okay.
that when we don't sit on things for too long and we try and catch what's going on in the moment. So when we go into the studio, we all try and just be ready to, we've got to be in the right headspace and get ready to, like, hit the ground running and, like, everyone catch whatever magic's in the room and try and materialize that and whatever's going on. I think that there are some songs that it doesn't work like that, and we've got to sit on them a bit longer and they require a little bit more finesse. But yeah, I think that we do work at our best when there's almost not time to be second guessing yourself. It's like, right, put something down, right, that works, move on to the next thing.
Okay.
Because when you start worrying about what it is that you've already done, it just takes so long. And sometimes the most important thing about recording music is the momentum. Because when if someone says, I'm not really sure about that bass part, then the bass player's got to try a new bass part, but his confidence has been knocked a little bit. And so the next part takes longer, and then everyone's sitting about on their phones and stuff like that. So yeah,
Right.
I think we try and get in and hit it as hard as we can and get as much out of the time that we put into the recording as possible. But at the same time, this entire album was recorded. Yeah, there was a short period of time at the start when we got the bulk of the work done, but we toured it all across the world, and we were recording parts in hotel rooms and in studios and different
Okay.
continents, other places.
How does that affect the process then, as you are on the go and still playing music, kind of half of the time, and then writing new music the other half of the time? Is that difficult to balance, or does the live playing influence the songwriting in some way?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like as a guitar player, I'm almost at my best when we're in the middle of a tour,
Okay.
because I'm doing it every single day. I'm well oiled,
Sure.
do you know what I mean? Regimented and all that kind of stuff.
Game shape.
Yeah, exactly. Match fit. So it feels like, yeah, I feel like for me personally, it's quite comfortable. I think for Jack, who's obviously writing songs and going out and having to sing every night, I think it's very mentally taxing. But
Right.
he loves that. That's his bread and butter. I don't think he'd have it any other way.
Was there one song that ended up on the album that you immediately kind of had this idea for and immediately kind of knew how you wanted to kind of fill your parts in?
So, with Gloria, the first track that we put out way back
Sure.
at the spring last year, I think, Gloria was, Jack had sent a voice note that had the first few lyrics and like a chord pattern, and I took that and built the rest of the stuff on like a loop pedal, and I had like 12 guitar tracks all on top of each other. But I had like an actual idea of what I wanted it to sound like, and the one of the really freeing things about this record is it's been so much more direct from having an idea to getting the idea to the finalized recording process, because there's not a major label with so many cooks coming in and saying, oh no, do you not think that we need to turn that snare sound up a little bit? And change. So it's been really good to have an idea, share the idea with the boys, get the idea recorded, and then that's it. It's done with no more tweaking or twiddling.
No, that's very interesting, because if you listen to the album, there is a certain immediacy, or the energy that is on the album is different than Burn the Empire. There's a certain I don't know how to describe it, but there's a certain immediacy or urgency to it. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, this is a thing that we've heard from a few people, and we're really glad that that's coming across, because that was absolutely one of the intentions when we were making the record. We wanted to not so much trim the fat, but not have any fat to start with. Do you know what I mean? It was if we're doing so, like, and I think we were all really conscious of that. Like, I'm a guitar player. I know you're a guitar player as well, so we do quite enjoy playing a little bit intricate stuff that's maybe not
Sure.
necessary. But I think we all had the same kind of ethos of, no, we get what needs to be on track, and then we move on. And that way, it's kind of the immediacy that we felt when we were recording it seems to have translated into the way the track actually sounds at the end of the process.
Sure. And in terms of the lyrics, then, do you discuss them amongst the group, where they are, how does that work?
Jack absolutely writes the lyrics. Jack is the lyricist of the band. Sometimes he runs everything past us, and I think the way he field tests lyrics is when he'll be like writing away, and then he'll maybe sing it to himself under his breath a few times, and then if someone or if no one says, "Oh, that's good, man," it'll get scrapped. But yeah, so we'll sometimes have little bits of input. I think Callum this time round, the bass player, he's actually done a little bit of help with the lyrics and stuff like that on the record. But in general, the lyrics are quite a personal thing to Jack. But I think what he does is discusses the idea of the song with us, and he help. I think the discussion that he has with us helps inform where he's going with the song.
Sure, because yeah, I can imagine that it's a reciprocal relationship, right? The music influences the words, and then the words can influence the music again, and
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly kind of what happens. Sometimes Jack will have like a guitar part or a couple of lines of lyrics, and then we're trying to build a song that fit to those lyrics. And then sometimes it's a guitar line or like a drum line or a bass hook or whatever. And it's like, right, well, that's cool. And what can we do with that? And that's kind of what I was saying earlier as well, man. It's
Sure.
not we're not trying to do this is how we write songs. It's just that's cool. Let's do something with that, and then just trying to build on anything that we think's worth building on.
This what you mentioned right now, was that part of the decision of leaving the label then, and kind of leaving a major label and having some more of that kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but creative control perhaps, or kind of the less pressure in a way?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. It's not that there were I think the people that we were working at the label with, sorry, the people that we were working with at the label, I've got no like ill will against them, but
Sure.
it's yeah, just having like the phrase "too many cooks spoils the broth," do you know what I mean? So there was, if you're trying to do something creative, which like by definition is a little bit. You've got to make yourself a bit vulnerable, and you've got to do things that you maybe it's quite hard to criticize to hear criticism about.
Sure.
And we're quite good amongst the four of us and the five of us. Scott Anderson, our friend that produced the record, we are close enough amongst us that we're good at criticizing each other in like a a good way, and we can take it, and that's absolutely fine. But it's rough when it's just some guy that's heard the song once and he's like, I don't like it. So yeah, absolutely. Getting away from the label, creative freedom was like the primary reason that we wanted to do that.
But do you, I mean, you've had a number one record already, so but is our chart positions, that kind of thing, is that important to the band?
I think that I'd be lying if I'd said that there was absolutely no gratification that you get from these kind of things, but it's really not a priority for us
Sure.
other than these kind of things on a like a business level. They do well for your festival slots next year and for the people that want to do interviews and all that kind of stuff, and like it all feeds into the longevity of your career, where you're going to get to play next time round, and so they matter in a sense, but not really as much as having people actually like music for us.
So I'll end on that then. What is the, I mean, this is maybe too contrived or something, but what is the aim of the band, if I might put it that way?
Oh, that might be quite a big question. I think we're all just trying to make music to make Actually, we're making music for each other.
Okay.
That's what we've always kind of tried to do. The people whose opinion we care most about the music is the rest of us. So that's always been our goal, was to make music that we all really, really enjoy. And as a to be able to do that, everything else kind of comes along with it. So like our goals and our career ambitions and all that stuff all kind of boil down to the same thing, just making music that we are grateful that we've made and we're, yeah, like appreciative of.
Very quickly, what was there, maybe there wasn't, and then I'll cut this out, but was there an idea perhaps that you were thinking of presenting to the band, and kind of you were nervous about presenting it?
Oh, just my death metal album that I'm trying to put out next year. No, not really. No, we're all good. I think one of the good things about us is that we don't really fit too much into one specific genre, and we all listen to different music as well. So if I've been listening to something that's a little bit different from what we usually do, it usually finds its way into the music that we're recording anyway. It's not like we pigeonhole things and say, "Oh, well, I can't use that because that's too much of a rock and roll sound, or that's too much of a dance sound, or whatever." Like, we just kind of roll with the punches and go with whatever we think's good.
Sounds great. Joe, may I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.